Today, I'm so lucky to be joined by one of my heroes, Vanessa Feltz. Now, you may know Vanessa as a TV presenter, a radio host, a warm, whip-smart woman with a capacity not only to entertain, but to deliver insight and empathy on any topic. What you may not know is that she's a fully paid-up member of the Broken Hearts Club. Our friendship started when she received my book and interviewed me on her radio show. She was incredibly supportive and generously shared her own experiences with me. She described the agony and humiliation she felt when her first husband left her publicly for another woman, and her utter bewilderment at his cruel treatment and coldness. Now, very recently, she has been blindsided by the end of her 15-year relationship. We recorded this episode before this breakup hit the headlines, but true to form, she has been honest about the devastation she's feeling, openly displaying the pain so many of us have felt or are feeling right now. So here she is, the inspirational Vanessa Feltz, and I hope this episode brings you hope and comfort in equal measure. Hello and welcome to Life's Rosie, from Heartbreak to Happy, the podcast that will hold your hand through your breakup recovery to take you from rock bottom to reinvention and help you survive and thrive. Today I am so lucky to be joined by one of my heroes, Vanessa Feltz. Now, you may know Vanessa as a TV presenter, a radio host, a warm, whip-smart woman with a capacity not only to entertain, but to deliver insight and empathy on any topic. What you may not know is that she experienced a devastating breakup when her first husband left her publicly for another woman. When she received my book and interviewed me on her radio show, she was so supportive and shared her experience with me, and this helped immeasurably. So I wanted to pass it forward to bring her wisdom, warmth, and insight to you. Hello, Vanessa. I so appreciate you doing my podcast. I have to say, I felt so supported by you the first time we ever spoke, which was on your radio show, and you were so supportive of my book, and you were so open about your experiences. And actually, I have to say, just by sharing your experiences, you made me feel less alone and, you know, more like there was hope out there and there was inspiration. So I guess in terms of your story, do you think you could just share, I guess, what happened?
Well, I think the reason that I supported you so wholeheartedly was because I'd never really quite heard anybody tell it the way I felt it was. I hadn't ever heard anybody's experiences that I thought was so searingly honest about the shock and the pain and the magnitude of dealing with a divorce from somebody that you think loves you and that you know that you love. And so, you know, that's why I responded so enthusiastically to what you said, because I just thought that you had a kind of truth and honesty and integrity and a vividness about the way you beautifully and so accurately described what you went through. And so that's why I'm here today. And that's why I'm very proud to be part of your podcast and very honoured that you asked me. But my experience was simply, and I think in a way, maybe it sounds so childish to people, or maybe it sounds so stupid, I don't know. But this is the truth of, this is what I experienced. And that was, I got married to this doctor that my grandma found. She was a patient in University College Hospital, and he came to take her blood pressure. And, you know, being a Jewish grandma, she was looking for a husband for her granddaughter, and he was a handsome young doctor. And she said, "Are you Jewish?" And he said, "Yes." And she said, "Are you married?" And he said, "No." And she said, "Have I got a girl for you?" And that used to be the happy ever after story, because we, you know, the happy part of it was that we met, you know, he said, we'll send her up to see me then. And my grandma said to me, "For God's sake, brush your hair, put some lipstick on, go down to casualty and introduce yourself to this doctor I met." And I did, although I was cursing all the way. I felt so embarrassed and so shy and so like, oh my God, how could you possibly put me in this terrible position? But I did go, and he wrote down my phone number on the collar of his white coat, you know, his clinical white coat. And my grandma said, "Oh my God, he'll send that to the hospital laundry, you know, he'll lose the number, you idiot, you should have had it on a piece of paper to give to him." And the punchline of that story used to be, and then we got married and lived happily ever after, and we've got two beautiful daughters, and it's the most incredible story. And my grandma was my guardian angel to do that for me, to find me my Mr. Right, my true love. And I've got to say, that was a story I implicitly believed in and thought I was living. And I didn't think I was being, you know, stupidly, sloshily sentimental. And I didn't think that I was kind of believing in a sort of Hollywood ending that was unrealistic. I mean, I really did believe in it. I really, really thought that we were, you know, very, very lucky, and that we properly loved each other, and that we respected each other, and that we were very different, but very unified in our attitudes to life and to marriage. And it turns out I was completely wrong about that. I was so wrong. And so therefore, when on the day that it was just another normal Sunday and I was just peeling the potatoes and his mum was coming for lunch and, you know, the girls were gorgeous and life was, you know, really pretty good because I had got the Vanessa show. So I had, you know, regular television work and I had quite a lot of money coming in and he had just become a consultant. So he had a private practice. And so for years and years, we've been struggling along on a junior hospital doctor's salary and a junior journalist salary, which is almost nothing. And so we were really struggling away for years. And suddenly we'd had this financial breakthrough plus a, you know, career breakthrough. Plus, I thought we were so lucky because although people started to suddenly start making a fuss about me because I was on the telly and I got famous and all that kind of thing, he was never going to be diminished by this because he was a surgeon. So people had a great deal of respect and reverence for him. And so I thought this was so lucky. You know, we had this fabulous balance and also we had all the joy of having a few quid that we'd never had before. And also these two incredibly picturesque and gorgeous daughters who were not an acquired taste, but were just completely as if I'd rented them from Central Casting. That's how lovely and pretty and sweet and gorgeous they are. And they still are. And
so I've seen the pictures.
Massively lucked out, you see. And then so this ordinary, completely ordinary, nondescript Sunday morning, I'm literally peeling the potatoes in the kitchen. His mother's coming for lunch. And friends of ours had just had a baby and their oldest child was 16. And I said to him, just casually in the kitchen, well, maybe we can, you know, go and see them and just go and see the baby and then maybe we can have another baby. And in a voice belonging not to a human being, but to a Dalek that I never heard in my life before, he answered, I do not rule out the possibility of a divorce. And it was cataclysmic. I had no idea that he wasn't happily married to me. None, absolutely none. And when people say, as they have said many times over the last 22 years, oh, you must have known, you know, if you didn't know, you must have turned a blind eye, you know, you must have not wanted to know. That's not true. I was supremely interested in him and my marriage. I loved him beyond all measure. Of course I was alert to anything that I thought was going wrong in the marriage or relationship, if I had thought it was going wrong.
You're an emotionally intelligent person. You would, you would have picked things up or you would have thought you would pick things up.
I would have thought I would have done, and I didn't pick up on anything at all. And obviously the factor that most people don't mention is if the other person doesn't want you to know and is a good actor and is clever at concealing things, and he's a surgeon, he's a very bright guy, he wasn't some simpleton, he's a very bright, clever guy, and he absolutely and utterly, I think, devoted himself to making bloody sure I didn't know.
And also, to me, it just goes to show you can be a surgeon, you can be the brightest person in the world, but actually, you know, still the basic, the more baser human things, like, you know, affairs and deception, they happen across the classes, across the intelligence, they happen everywhere, don't they?
Definitely, yes. And I think if you're a very bright and adept person and you're clever at acting, concealing, you know, appearing to be a certain thing when you're actually not, then that's what you are. You're good at all that stuff. And obviously I'd been with him by this time 16 years. We were 21 or 22 when we met. I was about coming up to 37, I think, when this happened. And I just trusted everything about him. And so I hadn't dreamed that he wasn't happy. I didn't realise at all. And when I tried to, when he said it was so shocking, I said, what do you mean? But we loved each other. We were really happy. What do you mean? And he wouldn't answer. He wouldn't elaborate. He wouldn't say anything. And I went through the day as if in a dream. And his mother did come for lunch. And we did go around to those friends with the baby. And he behaved completely
all the time. Your heart must have just been sinking. You just must have been thinking, what is going on? Did I really hear those words?
Exactly. I thought I must have dreamed it. It was so utterly outlandish. How could my husband even say such a thing? I just could. And finally, when the children finally went to bed and it was, let's say, about 8 o'clock in the evening, and I said, you know what you said earlier? You know, what did you mean by that? And he said, I do not rule out the possibility of a divorce. And then I was just really from that day just plunged into the most terrible, terrible nightmare. And it was absolutely agonizing. And I, after 22 years, obviously I've moved on in every possible way that you can. You know, I moved house, I have a lovely new relationship, and, you know, I've done lots of career things, and I've done all I can to put it behind me. I don't think I could do any more than I've done. And I still remain. I know you can't remain shocked, because shock obviously is obviously an instantaneous thing, but I remain What's the right word? Go on, you help me out. What do I remain?
No, I mean, I'm still, I think it's very, very destabilizing, isn't it? And I think it is a form of, you know, when I was interviewing experts for my book, you know, I think it is a form of PTSD because it's such a big shock. I mean, whether that's the correct term or not, but it's such a big shock that something so monumental has happened, and yet it's been sort of concealed from you, and that you know, I mean, I was absolutely in shock, and I still find it gratifying now, actually, when friends of mine said we had no idea, because that stops me from feeling so stupid, you know, because actually they couldn't see it at all. What point did you sort of hit rock bottom? Was that the point that he went? The worst time for me was trying to kind of keep the relationship together. Was there any of that for you?
Yes. He did something which, when I think about it now, is I think one of the cruelest things that anyone could do to anyone, which is after a couple of days, I think it was, in which I was just ricocheting about the place in total shock. I didn't know what to say to him. I didn't know how to behave. I didn't know what to do. And I certainly didn't know what to say to the children, if anything. And I didn't know what to do. But he did say after a few days, I think it was, he said, I am prepared to give you a trial period. And those were his exact words. And I was in such a state, I was prepared to do anything. So instead of saying what I should have said, which is a trial for what? What have I done?
Yeah.
You know, how can I be on trial? I'm your wife. What do you mean? I didn't. I said, okay, you know, all right. Okay, yes, you know.
And isn't that interesting? You are, you know, I think, you know, you are so smart. You're so successful. You're so beautiful. You're all those things. And I think from the outside world, people would think, yeah, you just tell him to bugger off, basically, which is what I thought I would always do. Exactly. And also your whole world has been destabilised. So actually your brain is just trying to figure out a way of keeping the status quo, right? You will do anything.
And also he's my children's father. I didn't want him to bugger off. Yeah. He's my husband. I loved him. I didn't want him to bugger off. I wanted him to stay, and I wanted our marriage to be strong, and I wanted us to be together. And so I really think whatever he had said, I would have tried to do it, whatever it was, but he didn't really say anything. So he said, I'm prepared to give you a 12-week trial period. And I kind of fastened on that as I'll kind of earn the right in this 12 weeks to continue to be his wife. I'll whatever I think he wants me to do, and it was impossible to know what it was.
Yes, exactly. Is it looking better? Is it creating nicer dinners? Is it kind of, you know, having sex every night? You know, what is it? But actually, presumably, that was just his exit strategy that he worked out in his head. And this is reasonable for me to give her this much notice, presumably.
I think that's absolutely right. But of course, I had no idea of that at the time. And so I tried to do whatever I thought would entice him to stay. So I basically stopped eating completely. First of all, I wasn't hungry for the first time in my entire life. But secondly, I thought, get thinner. You know, maybe
when those people say, like, I forgot to eat breakfast, that was never me. But actually, this then did become me for that period of time.
Me too. The only time that I didn't feel like eating. But I mean, I was consciously, A, not feeling like eating, but B, really thinking if I could just lose weight, maybe he'd fancy me more. But I hadn't known he didn't fancy me before. I thought that he did fancy me. So I hadn't even known, you know, I didn't. So I tried to do all the things you've said, actually. I tried to fill the house with friends and family, although we'd always had friends and family, you know, but I did it more. I made the meals more elaborate. I know where I might have used a tin of soup. I made the soup from scratch. I was trying to show, look at this lovely life we have. Look at your beautiful girls. Yes. Look at our friends. Look at our family. Look at the warmth. Look at the liveliness. And also look what I will do to keep you. I'll do anything, absolutely anything, because I love you. I never liked, for example, I don't like sports or anything like that. But I thought, well, you know, if you want me to take up golf, I'll take up golf. If you want me to, you know, learn to ski, I'll learn to ski. And I also did begin to think that maybe if I gave up my job, which I, of course, love my job, but I thought maybe if I stopped work and I could be like a full-time housewife or something, maybe that might, you know, I would have done absolutely anything. But I think it was week 7 of this utter anguish where I was trying to be something I didn't even know what to try to be, and the girls were saying what's happening, and they were 6 and 9, oh no, they weren't, they were 10 and 13, and I didn't know what to say. I couldn't answer because I didn't know what was happening.
For me, that was the worst bit. It's almost like at least when you hit rock bottom, but that to me, that sort of desperate trying to keep it together for the children and behaving in a way that's so foreign to yourself. Yeah. And then also your back, I don't know about you, but your boundaries are so eroded. You know, I allowed him to say things to me that I would normally kick back on. It was just the worst time. It's just like waiting for the punch, basically.
It was absolutely terrible, but I was hoping to avert the punch. I was thinking it might not happen. I couldn't really believe it would happen because I hadn't known that there was any conflict or unhappiness at all. The idea that he would literally walk out of our lives, it was unconscionable to me. I just couldn't believe it. So I kind of really did think, I thought if I just try harder, if I just show more, if I just am either less or more, whatever it is, it might work and he might not leave. And also I didn't know that he had not one, not two, but a whole variety of other, I wouldn't say partners, but, you know, hookups, whatever they were. I don't know what they were, but I didn't know.
And that, if you don't know that, that's the absolute, you know, that messes with your mind so much because, you know, ultimately, if somebody's attentions are elsewhere, you know, that pull is so strong. Those dopamine hits are so strong. But, you know, this person that you love and trust is saying, well, that's not the case. That's not what's happening. So, you know, it's just, I mean, oh, God, even just talking to you, I can feel it now. It is the worst kind of pain, isn't it? And you can't, I don't know about you, but I didn't tell anyone because, you know, you want to think, well, if I can save this marriage, I don't want everyone walking around thinking, you know, thinking worse of him, you know, so you're on your own in this.
Very true. Exactly right. My mother had died only a couple of years earlier, so I didn't really have anyone to confide in about it. And yes, you're quite right. You don't want to say in case you do manage to salvage it and, you know, then you can hope to carry on as normal. But talking about it to you now, exactly as you say, all the feelings are rising up again. I'm beginning to wonder why I agreed to do this because, you know.
Well, we might get on to the positive things about how you've come through it.
If we just get to the punchline of this. So all of this was going on and I was trying to do something, to be my best self, to show him he couldn't possibly leave. And he said I had this 12-week trial period and we went to a wedding. And I should say that if I ever tried to say, well, and how's it going? You know, how is the trial going? You know, is this right? Is this wrong? He got furious, absolutely furious. And one of the things that you wrote really resonated with me, which is you would think, or I would have thought, and I kind of still think, if you're about to really hurt someone desperately, at least be nice to them. At least be nice to them. Because you're about to deal them probably the worst blow of their whole life. And you are doing this to them and they're not in the know. They don't know what's happening. You've taken all control of their own life away from them and you're about to deliver the absolute most deadly blow. The marriage is over. You're walking out the door. You're never coming back. You don't love them. You don't fancy them. You don't want to be anywhere near them. Wouldn't you at least be nice to them? And he was not nice. He was horrible to me during that period
and cold,
so cold. And if I tried to say, is it working, you know, is the trial working, instead of saying, you know, yes or no, he was just, I don't want to discuss it, you're setting back your own future by discussing it. So I wasn't even allowed to ask, is it working? So I didn't know what was happening. And then in week 7 we went to a wedding. And I thought maybe, at the wedding I started thinking, well, maybe it is working, because I remember he danced with me. I think he might have held my hand for a brief moment, you know, and on the way home in the car, I started to breathe a bit more easily than I breathed the whole 7 weeks before, thinking maybe he is seeing, you know, how much love there is, and we walked into the house. I remember taking this sort of hair grips out of my hair all up, and I was taking the pins out of my hair at the dressing table. He was in the bed. And I thought, maybe he does really love me and he's not going to leave. Maybe, praying, please let this be true. And suddenly he just burst out of bed in his pyjamas and he said, I can no longer live in this house. I cannot stay another minute. And he left. So I never even got the 12-week trial period.
Oh, my God. And by that stage, he's leaving, you know, he's leaving you and you're so broken already. That's by the 12 weeks and so... You know, then I don't know about your experience, but then your kind of mind is scattering everywhere. You know, what are they doing? Who are they with? And it becomes very much, you know, for me, that was the rock bottom, because you're trying to your brain's trying to get to grips with it.
I don't think I was even thinking, where is he going? Who is he with? Yeah. I was just trying to breathe, I think.
Yeah.
I was more like, I was just kind of...
And physically, how did you feel? You'd obviously lost lots of weight and you were, you know, were you physically depleted as well as mentally depleted?
I was just, I was just flattened, really. I couldn't sleep, I couldn't eat, I couldn't sit down, I couldn't read a book, and yet for the girls I was trying to put a good face on, because of course he left in the middle of the night and he hadn't even told them he was going or anything. And I knew that, and I said to him, he has to come back the next day to tell them. And he did, and he never came back again. I've barely ever seen him since. I've probably seen him in the last 22 years twice for 10 minutes maximum, kind of thing. And when he actually left, I honestly felt the sun would never rise. I wouldn't know how to get through the first day or any other day. You know, it was the most acute grief, shock, bereavement, disappointment. It was really, really horrible. And that's why I so identified with what you said. And I thought you're one of the few people who tells it correctly, you know. I thought I might have a heart attack. My heart was pounding and beating and thumping. And I don't think I felt physically at all normal for about 3 years afterwards, something like that.
Yeah, it does. It takes so long, I think, to feel. And what were your, you know, for me, I remember, you know, I too was trying to like get the children. But what I didn't have and what you have, which was just been must have been awful, is obviously, you know, your public persona, you're doing your TV program. I mean, did you manage to keep working through that? How did you get out of the door to do that?
I did carry on working. But obviously it was a front page newspaper story. We had paparazzi following us. He had actually tipped them off, it turned out. And then I did get a call from a tabloid newspaper a few weeks later to say, actually, we've got pictures of your husband with the woman he's seeing. I didn't even know he was seeing anyone. I had absolutely no idea. And then there were pictures in the paper of him with a woman who was, I was 37, she was 26. I didn't even know that I was an older woman at 37. Yeah. I didn't feel old. I didn't know I was too old. I had no idea. And all of it was unfurling completely in the public eye, all of it.
Yeah.
And articles started appearing in magazines, etc., you know, purporting to know exactly what was going on when I hadn't even had the faintest idea what was going on in my own marriage or life.
I guess we all have a degree of that now, but because you can see on social media who someone's with, or you might hear about your ex being spotted out with someone. But for you, I can't imagine that level. That must just have been a whole nother level of stress and trauma.
But the most peculiar thing was I didn't care that much about the public thing. Yes. Because I was feeling acutely in real life, my real life, my real children, my actual self. That what somebody else wanted to write, or what somebody in Scunthorpe thought about what I was going on. I mean, I really, that was the least of my problems, really. I didn't really, people say it must have been so terrible for everyone to have known, it must have been so awful, but actually it was so awful anyway, that the public or non-public side of it was really just pretty much insignificant to me. I didn't care about that. I had enough trouble just getting through the day and piloting my children through the day and trying to live and not completely fold and just disintegrate, quite frankly, that whether somebody was reading about it or they weren't reading about it, or they knew or they didn't know, that was not the main thing as far as I was concerned.
So tell me, how did you start to, obviously time, you know, everyone says that and it's very frustrating at the beginning, but how did you start to build yourself back up? Were there some kind people, a bit like you did to me, or, you know, lots of my friends, were there people who reached out to you and said, actually, this is my experience too? How did you sort of start to heal?
I think it was partly basically having to carry on for the children, because what else can you do? I think it was partly, as you say, some very kind people, and lots of them were unexpected. So the best friends who you thought would be there through thick and thin, quite a lot of them were not. Mm-hmm. I don't know why. I still don't really know why. I think it might be the thing of they thought I might want to waft off with their husbands, which I most certainly didn't, and never would have dreamed of doing under any circumstances. And especially, I mean, I never would have done anyway, but after what I'd been through, I was hardly going to be instrumental in breaking up someone else's marriage. I mean, of course I wouldn't do that. But you know, the people that I thought would be the most reliable and weren't necessarily there, totally unexpected people, like people at work that, you know, I thought were acquaintances, turned into the most wonderful friends, to my surprise and to my eternal gratitude, really. And then I started to go out with somebody else fairly quickly.
That was one of my questions to you. Do you think you need some time alone, or do you think actually a new relationship is just very healing and it's a very good thing?
I couldn't really survive alone. I'm not very good at being on my own.
I mean,
it's just so, I hate being on my own, quite honestly. And I I mean, I felt that it would be, if I could possibly meet someone or something, that would be a tremendous distraction and also be a great sort of rebuilder of self-esteem. And it was for about, I don't know, was it 3 months or something that were great? And then he just dumped me. And then I just, it was kind of like double dumping in an incredibly short time. And that was awful too.
So now you're totally on the floor at this point.
Yeah, totally on the floor. But I was very, very keen not to be bitter and twisted and hate all men and be cynical and never believe in love and all that. I didn't want to do that. And I said that to the girls as well. I said, you know, this doesn't mean that it's not possible. It doesn't mean it doesn't exist. It doesn't mean all men are bad. It doesn't. And I said, you know, you may feel so angry and so shocked and so resentful, but I said it would be such a shame if you turn it in on yourself, you know, and you sabotage yourself and you sabotage your chance of you know, falling in love and living happily ever after. I said, because I still believe in it. And I do, and I still believe in it. I do believe that you can find a partner who compliments you and supports you and loves you and, you know, that you enjoy and that you fancy and that you're happy with. I just do believe in it still. And I didn't want to be, you know, the sort of person who for the rest of your life has all your chance of happiness and good relationships ruined. And I didn't want that for the girls either. So I think, you know, I believed in the fairy tale, and I believe the fairy tale wasn't a fairy tale.
And also, I think, you know, I remember people saying to me, you know, when I was going through it, you know, you'll actually at some stage be grateful. You know, you'll be grateful because that relationship had obviously run its course and it wasn't going to make you happy. And you'll find, you know, you're, you know, well, first of all, there's the sort of, it sounds slightly woo-woo, but that you'll kind of fall in love with yourself again. And I do feel like I've done that. But also that, you know, actually that person was right for you. Then it sounded like you did have a, you know, for 15 years, you did have a good relationship. And so actually, do you feel that now? Do you feel that, you know, it was awful, but actually your life now is happy?
You know, yes. And I mean, yes, but I think if to be honest, and there's no point doing this if I'm not honest, I can't see any point.
No, I agree. It has to be honest.
Turning out of your platitudes that I, you know, that I think people want to hear.
Yeah.
You know, yes, I do feel happy, but I also feel that the things after a divorce, things are difficult. For example, you know, your first grandchild, let's say my first grandchild, you know, it would have been lovely to have gone to the hospital to see that baby with the actual grandpa of the baby, both sharing, you know, similar feelings at the very same time. Big things like, you know, my daughter's weddings and, you know, the kind of, you know, the graduations and the milestone things, you know, where it would have been lovely to have shared those huge, important, wonderful occasions with their father. You know, that would have been great. And there has been no desire, particularly from that, from his side, to ever do anything together or ever, you know, do the things that some couples are so great at doing. Some divorced couples will share lots of things, Christmas Day, birthdays. We've never done any of that. And I think it's a terrible shame. And, you know, I was conscious of going to details, but I would have liked to have managed to try to do that at any rate. And that never happened. So I have felt such a, you know, such a level of disappointment and, well, to some level, sorrow at the really wonderful moments.
I think you're right. You have to be on. And I think that's what the, you know, the people listening will want, because actually it's like, yeah, there were sadnesses, there were excitements. I mean, you know, I'm sure, you know, having a great new relationship. And for me, I, you know, I'm trying to do things better and be some more self-aware in the next relationship so I don't make, you know, I don't make the same mistakes again. But you're right. I think there will always be a sadness that, you know, certainly a sadness for the children as well, that their kind of life was, it will never be simple, exactly as you say.
That's right. Yes.
Yeah. And so I guess finally, because you've just been so kind giving us all this time, I just wondered if you were, you know, if you were to look back at yourself in that sort of hellish situation where you felt really awful. So to all those women, I guess, out there who are in that situation that you were in your 7 week part trial period or when he just left, you know, what would you say to help them get them through?
I would say that it's a very peculiar thing, but you know, it's not the life you chose. It's not the one that you picked from the menu. You know, you thought you were picking a certain thing and you thought that's what you were going to get. You got something completely different and not what you wanted and not what you thought was going to happen. And you're completely derailed. And, you know, your future isn't what you thought your future was going to be. When you look at, back at the past, you realize your past wasn't what you thought it was either. And it's the most horrible situation. And yet, I am, you know, living proof to my astonishment, really, that you can go on to have great adventures. You find your life going in ways you never dreamed it would. You're suddenly mixing with people you never thought you'd know, in places you never thought you'd go, having fun and adventures you never dreamed in a million years you'd have. And, you know, it's not all bad. It's not all good either. There are some horrible shocks along the way, I think, and disappointments. But it is interesting. And it is, you know, loaded with experiences that you never dreamed would be part of your life. And, you know, after a certain time, you know, the terrible pain and this dreadful feeling does lessen. And, you know, time, you know, it's a terrible cliche, but also true, is a healer. And, you know, you begin to feel better about things. And then you learn all sorts of things about yourself and other people you never dreamed you'd know. And it's not all bad. It's not all good. But on balance, you know, you can be very lucky and find that some really wonderful things happen to you that never would have happened to you otherwise. And so, you know, it's not the story of my life I would have written, but it's certainly, you know, not without romance and love and fun and great new friends and, you know, just wonderful things along the way that I never would have had otherwise.
You know, I think by you sharing your story, as I know from when people have reacted to me, it just gives so much comfort and hope and, you know, you feel less alone when you're going through it. So I do. I massively, massively appreciate it. And
it's
especially
a pleasure.
Considering, you got up so early in the morning. So thank you, Vanessa, right from my heart. And I'm sure from the people that are listening as well.
Well, thank you so much for having me. And I really do think you're doing great things. And that's why I wanted to do this, because I really think it's very important to tell the truth about this and not, you know, not sort of airbrush it and, you know, computer digitalize and change it to make it quite, you know, a sort of temporary feeling that isn't that great, and then within minutes you move on, because that isn't how it is for most people. And I just wanted to tell my real experience. So thank you so much for asking me, and lots of love.
Thank you. Bye.
You have been listening to Life's Rosie, a Viral Tribe production. I'd be so grateful if you could like and subscribe wherever you currently listen to your podcast. To find out more about what Viral Tribe are up to, go to tribe.fm. That's tribe with two I's.fm. Sign up and join the podcast revolution. Thanks for listening.